Welcome to the Respectfully podcast. My name's Nikki Pope, your host for this hairdressing conversation. Our guest today is Tom Smith, a hairdresser with a portfolio career which includes being salon-based, travelling internationally to deliver education, brand ambassador roles including product development, and a consumer-facing role as trends forecaster. Tom trained at Vidal Sassoon, where he learned exceptional colour and cutting techniques. For the past 13 years or so, he's been based at the Billy Currie Salon in Fitzrovia, London. I'm hoping he'll give us a good insight into managing lots of roles and being master of them all. Tom Smith, hello and welcome to the Respectfully Podcast Studio Kitchen.
Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here.
Oh, it's lovely to see you. We are sitting here on a nice... Well, it was sunny spring morning. We've got the dog at my feet. Hopefully she will keep quiet and let us have a good chat.
Sounds great.
So you and I know each other from hair events over the years, but for our listeners, I know you as somebody who comes to colour events, a very accomplished colourist. You do lots of session work. I know you travel, you educate, and you are also salon-based. On your biography, it says you defy... categorization. Is that a conversation opener? Is that intentional?
I guess really that's, you know, referencing the fact that for so long in our industry, the norm has been to be a colorist or a cutter or an extensionist or a session stylist or an educator. And one of the things that I've always loved the most is the idea of combining many of those things together to be able to get across more projects. So I wear many hats in the work that I do. And I do colour, I do cutting, I do extensions, I do texture services and education, product development, presenting, etc. So I like the variety the most in my career. So I guess that's where that comes from.
Did you always have that when you were training? Was there kind of like somebody that you saw doing that and thought, right, that's how I'm going to be? Because I think there's quite a lot of pressure in some sectors of hairdressing to focus on something, isn't there?
There is, and I think it was the opposite. I think the very beginning of my career, I started at Sassoon, where, as you know, it's segmented into colourists and cutters, and I was a colourist at Sassoon. And I always felt hungry to do more and always felt a little bit like I was missing out on the full picture with my clients, to do the colour and then pass them over, to not have the ability to bring that full image to life was something that didn't feel aligned with my, I guess, morals and my philosophy for being creative. Yeah. So that was one of the reasons I moved on.
And you are based, you have been based quite a long time with Billy Currie, who, so was that a connection? Billy was also at Sassoon, wasn't he? Is that how you know each other?
Sort of. I was introduced to Billy through someone that worked at Sassoon. I loved the idea of working for an independent boutique salon, and I loved the prospect of being able to look after my clients holistically from start to finish and also grow myself and my skill set outside of the foundations I'd learnt at Sassoon.
So there must be, I mean, I know Debbie and Billy, and they are really creative and really invested in hairdressing. I think they love helping people nurture their careers and so on, because they must have been quite flexible then for you to have this sort of portfolio of things that you do, because some of them take you away from the salon maybe quite often.
That's right. They are the most wonderful people and just the most giving and fair mentors. They've got the perfect balance between, you know, being tough but fair, creative but smart. Like, they really are brilliant, and that's, you know, why I've been there so long. And I think it's a really good example of how business owners can manage their developing team to keep them and grow with them rather than have them grow out of them, if that makes sense.
And to stay there. Because I also love that Leslie Jennison is often based there as well, who is, you know, another real colour addict, colour inventor, just colour-tastic, really, as we say.
Yes.
So tell me about the colour side of things, because, again, let's share with people listening to this, you've been involved with brands from a very innovative point of view. You know, you've been at the start, I think, with a couple of them when they've really invented what they're doing and been there from the off.
Yeah, that's right. I've always been very driven by innovation and change. And through my trend forecasting work, I've done a lot of research in how innovation and trends happen. And I'm what you would call an early adopter, someone that doesn't mind taking a risk and trying something new. And I really love the potential for change in the industry. And so things like when Olaplex first came to the market, I was on the team that launched it in the UK. And
wow.
I was very aware in that moment that it was going to be a pivotal moment for the industry and change it. And I felt very lucky to be part of it at the time, but also have the awareness of how big of a change it was going to be.
Yeah. That category of product is now, you know, growing, and yeah. people are realizing it, that what Olaplex started has now spawned lots and lots of things. How do you think it has been a total game changer for colorists? Because it does seem to have really accelerated our ability to work with color in different ways and invent things. I'm not a colorist, but would you go as far as to say that?
Yeah, massively. A lot of the work that I do in colour is big transformations and big changes, and my heritage at Sassoon makes it very important to prioritise the condition of the hair. So when you combine those two things, the idea of being able to do transformative colour while respecting the condition of the hair is just the perfect scenario. And while there were reparative products available, there was nothing and still is nothing that does it in quite the same way as Olaplex, thanks to the patent.
So you have a clientele in the salon.
Yes.
So as well as educating and working with the brands on developing things, you look after your client base.
Yeah.
So again, I hear sometimes salon work can be quite repetitive, or it's similar, you know, people asking for things. Talk to me about your doing big transformations, but related to the salon. Do you have to kind of get known for doing that, or is it because you're persuading everybody to do that?
A little bit of both. I believe in never closing your books. So even though I've gradually reduced the amount of days that I've done in the salon over the last 13 years, I'm now hovering around 2 days a week in the salon with clients. I've never closed my books. So the way that I have done that is by managing demand through my pricing structure, and worked with Billy and Debbie really closely to make sure that that makes sense for everyone. We've got a fantastic team that look after some clients when I can't accommodate them when I'm away. So we've got a very open dynamic around sharing where needed. And so that means there's constantly a flow of new clients coming in that I can still justify taking, that therefore want the kind of the big work, the transformations. But, you know, every colorist out there will know it's exhausting to do only transformation all day, every day. So
yeah.
Again, it's kind of the variety of seeing my regulars progressing their colour or their whole hair plan gradually over the seasons is just as enriching as dramatic changes which happen organically from time to time.
Yeah. So your Instagram is very impressive, both in terms of numbers, but obviously you and maybe a small army of social media, I don't know, work very hard on it. It's really cool. And anybody listening, do jump on and have a look. So in the bio at the top, it says hair health, trend forecasting and brand consultancy. And then you have several global director roles and brand ambassador roles. How have you evolved this social media? How did you manage to grow it? Because it's super hard these days anyway.
It is. It's actually, I think, getting harder and harder. So my first 10,000 I built through the launch of Olaplex and all the exposure that I was getting through that. So that's coming up to 10 years ago now, when Olaplex was still quite new. And then I coasted along a little bit with my focus being elsewhere, trying to sort of keep things ticking over from a growth point of view. And I think it probably took, I don't know, maybe another 7 years to gain another 10,000, because it wasn't my priority. And then I think about 18 months ago, I began really thinking about the future direction of my career and what I love doing the most and what I wanted to make more time for and focus on. And I realized that social presence really opens doors nowadays. And I think that I had to reprioritize it, but I had to find a new way to do that because I just didn't have the time to do the editing and to do everything that's involved. I didn't have really the headspace, I would say, most importantly. And then it was around a similar sort of time I think I was listening to a podcast or heard this somewhere, that you need to think about how you value an hour of your time.
Yeah.
And if you can pay someone else to do a job for less than what that hour of your time you've deemed to be worth, that's a growth mindset. That's how you can do more and achieve more.
Yeah.
So I began sourcing help with the Instagram, very, very small in the beginning, just strategizing and getting a bit clearer. And then for the last 9 months, I think, I have had a social media manager who is responsible for a big portion of what I put out on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube. But more so, her responsibility is to hold the headspace and the brain capacity for making sure that things are consistent.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I film everything myself. I conceptualize the vast majority of it. All of the tone of voice and the captions and the messages and the replies is me.
Yeah.
But she's responsible for scheduling things the like video editing,
it,
the mechanics, yeah. the posting, exactly.
Yeah.
Which
yeah.
and also the accountability. I'm accountable to her to make sure that we're posting on the pre-agreed timeline.
Yeah. I think it's, I don't know, it's almost like manifesting how you want things to be. So if you put it out there, you can make it real. So if the kind of involvement you want with the consumer and the kind of image and brand that you want Tom Smith to be, I suppose because you started building it a couple of years ago, now it's a self-fulfilling prophecy in a way.
I think so. It takes a long time, and it takes a long time of being consistent before you see changes.
Yeah.
And I've still got a long way to go, but I now am very clear on who I'm speaking to. My goal with my social media is to connect directly with the consumer, with the end consumer. And my mission is really to help them get the best hair of their life, whether they come to me for their hair or not.
Yeah.
And giving away that, you know, guidance and advice then builds community and builds loyalty. And that then gives me an audience that's kind of watching, which then frankly makes me more valuable when it comes to working with brands, when it comes to future projects that I'll work on and so on.
Yeah. How aware do you have to be? Because I think it's interesting. You give a lot of advice. You do trends forecasting as well, which isn't just for the Instagram, but you share that with all of us. But you have a voice. You'll talk about things, but you're not afraid to have an opinion. Or to be clear about this isn't working or why are you doing this sort of thing. I don't mean in a very aggressive way. Is that something you've consciously done or has that naturally evolved? And do you have to be aware of not going too far with it because you don't want to stir things up or be negative in any way, but you have to be real.
Totally. And I love this question. It's something that it's funny that you say that because I feel some of the advice that I get or sometimes the way I feel is that I'm not divisive or opinionated enough and that I tend to be a bit too soft on socials. And if I look at the people that I look to for inspiration profile wise, I typically look outside of the hairdressing industry. I look at parallels and other verticals like skincare or beauty or dentistry or cosmetics and so on, people with similar profiles. And sometimes I see the controversy or the topics that they speak on and I think, oh, I couldn't possibly say that. And it's finding the balance between being really authentic and having opinions that you're willing to share, but still keeping that kindness and that emotional intelligence that I've worked really hard to build, you know, from the ground up with my clients and the psychology of hair and a hair appointment and making a client feel good, that I keep that balance and calmness and understanding and sort of interaction with my socials. And it doesn't become about clickbait controversy, but it becomes about let's have an authentic, honest conversation, and if people agree, fantastic. If they don't, let's discuss.
Yeah. And if they don't agree, have you had to work on not feeling too vulnerable or criticized? Because that's quite hard, isn't it? You know, and there's a lot of discussion in all walks of life about how people feel able to write things that they wouldn't actually say to you.
Yes.
Have you had to develop any kind of boundaries or thick skin, or have you been pretty okay with that?
I would say, as someone who, when I was growing up, wasn't treated very well in school and took a long time to kind of get comfortable with who I was, I now feel quite confident in who I am and I feel quite comfortable in my own skin. And that's part of my mission about helping people with their hair, is to help. I know how important your self-image is when connected to your self-esteem.
Yeah.
So improving my relationship with myself, just through growing up, through therapy, through working on it, has given me a confidence and I guess a self-assuredness that my intention is always good and positive and to help. If someone doesn't like it and we can have a balanced conversation, I love the debate and the idea of, you know, I'm very open to changing my mind on anything.
Yeah.
That's something that I think is really important. I think it's quite dangerous to be too fixed with your ideas and opinions. So
yeah.
I'm always open to changing my mind. When it comes to the unreasonable side of the trolls and the rude comments, I really genuinely just laugh it off. Sometimes if I'm feeling stressed in the moment, I write out a mean comment back and then just delete it.
Yeah.
Don't post it.
Yeah,
and sometimes you need to just get that out in the moment.
Do you post and watch, or does it go up and then sometime later you think, oh, that's doing quite well? Or are you still at this... wanting to sort of monitor things and feel quite like, oh, you know, is it gonna land? Is it gonna...
Yeah, I certainly have been that way. I would say since working with Rosie, my social media manager, I think I post and go. Well, she posts and I check in. And for me, I think that's a lot healthier for me to have planned out what I feel is the tone of voice that I want to share and the topics that I want to talk on in any given month, let it go out. And then if something's doing really well, then we'll check in and we will... re-strategize based on that, because if something catches, you want to kind of utilize that topic or that concept a bit more to try and have that snowball effect when a topic's going really viral. But I certainly don't clock watch the numbers like I would have before.
No, I think it's a habit you've got to talk yourself out of, really, ideally, I think, definitely.
Yeah.
So how do you describe your aesthetic? So we've talked about you being sort of having a portfolio career, not wanting to be categorised or pigeonholed. And yet there is, to me, I think, an aesthetic, certainly to the Instagram account, and probably to a lot of things I've seen you do whilst being very versatile. Do you agree? And how would you describe that?
Oh, I'm happy that you say that. Thank you. I struggled a lot with social media when it was more photographic based, because I was photographing my clients and I have an incredibly diverse clientele. I don't have a one look that I'm known for, and I don't have a signature look that I impress on others, although I don't judge people who do. I think it's actually a really efficient way of building a brand if you have a specific style that you're known for. For me, it's always been about working with the individual and unlocking something in them and allowing them to express themselves, and we work together to facilitate that. So something that I've struggled with in the past is finding a way to bring my aesthetic into this really wide range of hair that I might do, from something that's really loud and vivid to something that's really lived in to something that's very structural to something that's very soft. And so I'm happy that an aesthetic is coming across. I did work with a graphic designer to help with, you know, a little bit of the shades that we might use in some of the infographics and so on to bring some cohesion together through the website and the socials. So I'm glad that that's translating. But when it comes to hair, there's not one set tone that I stick with.
No, but I mean, to me, it's beautiful. I think that would be one of the things that I would say. It's always beautiful and it's healthy hair.
Yes.
And again, a great innovation in products and understanding about what creates healthy hair. Do you find that being talked about more by your clients? And maybe when I say clients, I don't mean just salon clients, but clients who are asking you to represent them and to educate and so on. Is that something that's coming through a lot more?
Massively. I think lots of the innovations that we've seen and that we will see over the next couple of years are going to be focused around improving the quality of the hair, repairing it and making it more resilient. That's really a foundation thought process that I learned early on at Sassoon, the idea of respecting the natural pattern and integrity of the hair. And I remember really early on hearing someone say, it doesn't matter how good the colour or cut is, if the condition's not good, the hair's not going to look good. And that's really stayed with me. So the reason that the first words on my social media are hair health is because without that, nothing else really matters.
Yeah.
And, you know, based on my experience behind the chair, that's a big concern for many people that are interested in changing their hair, or at least engaging with their hairstyle in some way, whether it be heat or through playing with colour. And it really is the core pillar for me from which everything else branches from.
Yeah, yeah. And I think there's better understanding. Do you find generally that people have the language to talk about hair services? In the media, we think people are doing that more. Is that the reality? Are people asking for more?
Interesting. I personally don't believe in working from a service menu, especially not now, and especially when it comes to colour, because it is no longer root colour, half head of highlights, full head of highlights. The techniques are so combined and bespoke. And I think it can be really challenging to try and create a service menu around looks and technique, because there are so many details and so many intricacies. So really it's much easier for me to say that because I'm not a salon owner. I haven't got to build a team who necessarily have, you know, that depth of skill and consultation to compile not only the design but the price attached to it as well.
Yeah.
But certainly for the way that I work with clients, there is no service menu. It is I don't price based on time, but I would say it's closer to time than it is to exactly the detail of what I'm doing.
Your trends forecasting, which you are really talking to the consumer, but you share with us in the media so that we can also do the same. I wanted to ask you, you give your trends little quirky names, you know, which kind of just sum them up. I wanted to ask you how useful that is, whether you find that reflected back in when people talking to you, but also trends generally. I know some people say, oh, I can't bear trends because actually there are no trends.
Yeah.
With your sort of consumer-facing head on, what would you say to that?
I think what's really important is that trends are... there is never just one thing that's trending because society is so varied. What happens is we have themes that go on. Right now, you know, the overarching theme at the moment would be the idea of old money, which has many branches off of it. So the old money trend is all about luxury and quality. Yeah. And that started with quiet luxury, the whisper of subtlety, and then has evolved into the old money blow dries and the real glamour and wealth signaling.
Yeah.
And then it's kind of gone a bit far in the mob wife trend, which is a little bit more super glam. But all of these things, while it feels like it's very fast moving, they branch off of an overarching theme.
Yeah.
And so what I'm doing with trends is I'm tracking the themes that run through all of the verticals of fashion, beauty, hair, etc. And so by turning those into hairstyles, it's incredibly engaging for consumers because they like that. They want inspiration. And what a trend is doing is not saying this is the way you should look. It's saying this is inspiration for the moment. Does this feel exciting to you? And can you bring a little bit of this into your haircut? And what that does is it drives clients back into the salon motivated for change, or motivated at least just to engage with their hair, which I think and hope is really valuable for our industry and valuable for the stylists and the salons to have excited, motivated clients coming back in.
Yeah, yeah.
I do, I guess, commercialize them in a way of giving them names. And while, you know, the names are very divisive, people criticize on social media the cowgirl copper. But what they might not realize is cowgirl copper came from research that I did in the last quarter of 2022. When heaps of designers were spreading in Western influences into their fashion.
Yeah.
And the cowgirl copper is the color of that Western leather that's so often used in cowboy boots and jackets and horse saddles. And so while it sounds silly, there is a specific reference for the shade.
Yeah.
And who wouldn't want to be a cool cowgirl with copper hair riding a horse through the desert?
Yeah, absolutely beautiful. And it's a great conversation as well. And I think it gives you an opportunity to then speak to the client about, you know, where the names come from and how it works. So
it's really no different than the fact that we wouldn't use color number system, like a 8.34 in 20 volume, to describe a color to a client. We would use warm, copper, rich, contrasting, dimensional. We have this language anyway.
Yeah.
And the coined terms that I use for trends are really just one step further than that, that should encourage a more detailed conversation, you know, about what that really means for you.
Yeah, excellent. So who is Team Tom? You've referenced getting, you know, help with social media, somebody who does that for you. We've talked about you working with Billy and Debbie, but who would be your sort of team currently that might help us understand how you structure your life? You know, do you have a PA? Do you have a chauffeur? Do you have a house
cleaner?
That'd
be nice,
wouldn't it? So who are the people who kind of hold you up and make this, frankly, very busy way of working possible?
It's funny because a little while ago I would have said, oh, I haven't got a team. And it was only recently I was sitting down with my mum, actually, and we were talking about, you know, different projects and different ideas. And she said, well, who are you working with now? And I said, oh, no one. And she said, well, you talk about this person and this person. And I sort of sat down and thought, okay, well, I work with a couple of amazing people at a PR company who really helped me to connect me with my chosen audience. Rosie, the social media manager, I work with her. And then in addition to that, I've got two really wonderful mentors who, in addition to Billy and Debbie, I should add, who are intentionally outside of the hairdressing industry.
Right.
And one of them, I would say, is a fantastic marketing expert. And that doesn't do her justice, but she's amazing, but in marketing specifically. And the other is in beauty.
Right.
And has had a public voice in beauty and makeup and so on. And having guidance from people just a little bit outside of the industry has been really helpful for me to stay authentic to what my direction is and not follow too closely to those in hair who have come before me. I really feel passionately about driving my own path, and some of the challenges that I faced are with other people wanting to understand my future by fitting into a set structure. Like, okay, you're a session stylist, you're going to work with celebrities, and then you're going to do this.
Yeah.
And I guess it's important to me to look outside to stay true to what feels right for me.
Yeah. Going forward, what is the plan? Are you a planner? Have you got a 1-year plan, a 5-year plan, a career plan?
I don't know if I've got a 5-year plan. I think for me, I'm very aware that I'm on the journey of profile build, and I don't think that there's it's always difficult to predict how long that journey will be. I'm working really hard to be helpful and to share openly advice and what I hope is value for people with their hair. I believe very strongly in innovation and aligning with brands that are doing things differently, that are challenging the status quo, and I'll continue to do that. But fundamentally, it's about, my goal is to be a recognized voice and hair expert for the industry that speaks in consumer language. And that's what's important to me, is to drive clients back into salons, but to improve the way that the clients communicate with the stylists, in the same way that my hair-based education allows me to help stylists communicate better with clients.
What's your take on the, there's a big focus, a big worry about people leaving salons to work freelance, to have their own businesses, to be self-employed. Do you have a view on it? Do you choose to work within a salon when you probably could easily go it alone? What's your take?
Yes, I think my situation is reasonably unique, and it's one that I'm very grateful for, but it's one that I believe many more people could build through open communication with their salon owner, and openness from the salon owner as well. I think my approach, and Billy and Debbie are fantastically receptive to it, but also I understand the value in watering your own grass and not always looking for greener grass.
Yeah.
Really investing in, you know, when a company's invested in you, when a salon owner's taken you on and maybe invested in some training or given you a chance when you didn't have too big of a clientele, you're responsible for paying your dues, in a way, in my opinion, and you know, making sure that you're giving back and you're investing back in the business the same way that you were invested in. But over time, depending on your career goals, if you want to go into education or session, or maybe you just want to have a family and work less, I think it's the communication with the salon owners in advance and having that open dialogue about what are the ways in which we can make this work for both of us.
Yeah.
And I'm fully aware that not every salon owner would have openness to change their business structure or to adapt it. And I'm also aware that not every stylist feels comfortable having those kinds of difficult conversations. But all I will share is that's what's been extremely helpful for me, is the idea of nothing can't be said in the right time, in the right way, in an appropriate manner.
Yeah.
But it's always been a case of, look, I really want to do this. There's this brand that I just love, and I feel really passionately that this is the direction that I want to go in. I respect my clients. I understand that without my clients, I have nothing else.
Right.
I want to look after them. Is there a way that we can find some flexibility in the structure of the business to find a balance here for both of us? And I think, speaking to salon owners now, if you have the ability to do that and to think creatively, it means that your most experienced team members, who know your business the best, can grow with you rather than move away from you.
Yeah, in order to get growth, you
absolutely
don't have to go off. Yeah,
I think it's also a shame to imagine that anyone who is not the owner or a shareholder in your business will care more about your business than their own career.
Yeah,
I think that's a little delusional.
Yeah.
And I think the openness to say, okay, what are your career goals that Billy and Debbie have, their openness and their mentorship, how can we help you achieve your goals whilst also making it work for our business?
Yeah.
I just think is incredibly smart because it's completely scalable. Whereas in traditional salon culture, where if you want to draw outside the lines, it no longer becomes the right fit, I think is possibly why so many stylists, especially young stylists who want a different work-life balance or a different level of independence, are moving into shared workspaces and freelancer situations.
Wow. Brilliant. So what's coming up for you in the immediate future this year? What does 2024 look like?
Well, I thought I hit my limit last year. I think I took 59 flights for work in 2023. But already where are we now? The beginning of March, and I'm already on 12, I think, so far. So I'm definitely on track to match last year. We've got a few launches for one of the brands I work for in Europe. I'll be back out in Australia with Evo in June, and I'm having a lot of really interesting conversations with brands who sit slightly outside the lines of what's traditionally offered in hairdressing that it's too early to speak on yet, but that are definitely, definitely very exciting. I'm also manifesting some kind of TV opportunity.
Oh, really?
I'm going to say it out loud to bring it into the universe.
But make it happen.
Who knows?
Wow, really interesting. Well, I wish you lots of luck with all of that. And I hope you're getting the air miles, if nothing else. Is there somewhere that you particularly like going? Is there anywhere that has your attention at the moment? The Americas, the Australia, the Europe?
Yeah, I always love Sydney. It's kind of become a bit of a second home because I spend a lot of time in Sydney, probably the second most amount of time to London, and it's pretty close. But I've decided that Miami is my happy place because it's the one place that I've never done a job. Whenever I visited to Miami, it's only ever been switch off time. And I think everyone needs that space.
Yeah, and it is a great place. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. I found that really insightful. I hope everybody else listening has as well. And we will follow you on Instagram. And I think there's some links in your bio on Instagram as well. And anybody listening can scroll down through the show notes and find some other directions. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Nikki.
Thanks, Tom. That was really entertaining and interesting. I hope you agree with me. If you like what you heard, then jump over to the Respectfully Podcast Library. We host it on our platform, respectfullyyou.me, but you'll also find us on iTunes, Spotify, and other podcast providing platforms. Until next time, goodbye.